Station number 11883, Mr. C. Anson, Reel 2.
It would have been at a time which was rather irrelevant under the rather urgent circumstances at the time. But the British, on the other hand, obviously couldn't accept large numbers of immigrants. On the other hand, they did accept refugees on the basis of a transit visa if it was a matter of saving lives immediately of people who could eventually re-emigrate where they had originally intended to go. And that was an enormously generous-hearted attitude which saved, I don't know how many lives, certainly tens of thousands. As a result, I was attached to one of the children's transports, the Kindertransporter, which are now receiving more publicity from people who came over rather younger and stayed together in groups and therefore got to know each other. I don't remember that particular transport as such because I was only attached to it being almost 17. I was 5 days before my 17th birthday, and that was rather important because on my 17th birthday I would have become subject to military service, and it would have been much more difficult still legitimately to get out of the country without hurting the interests of my mother, who had to stay behind. The refugee organizations were, of course, concerned mostly with rescuing Jewish people who were under the greatest threat, and my mother, not being Jewish, didn't qualify for that.
So this must have been February 39.
That was on the 7th of February 1939, and I was attached to a children's transport leaving from Frankfurt Station, from Frankfurt Hauptbahnhof, by train, under the charge of a man called Blaschke, which is a good Prussian name. Our frontier station was Emmerich, where everybody was ordered off the train, and the SS frontier police had a last cruel game with us, saying that we wouldn't be allowed to go, and scattering our luggage about, and cutting off people's ties in case they had hidden foreign currency in it, and that sort of thing. And then, with a laugh, eventually letting us back onto the train. And as the train pulled out, we all felt rather washed out. And not very long afterwards, the compartment door was flung open, and Mr. Blaschke called, "Wir sind auf holländischem Boden, we are on Dutch soil." And I've never had such a traumatic emotional shock in my life, not even when my father died, because was killed, because we were under such pressure that one expected the worst at all times. And to have lived under such pressure and grown quite accustomed to it for so long made one totally unprepared for the sudden explosive release of that pressure at the moment when we were told that we were no longer under it. I thought I'd faint. It was an amazing moment. I shall never forget it so long as I live.
If there are any more details about this particular Kindertransport you went on, its organization and so on, that you could give, I would be grateful.
I'm afraid I don't remember anything about it apart from the name of the man in charge, Mr. Blaschke, because unlike the younger members who were probably collected as a group, traveled as a group and possibly stayed together after they came to this country in children's refugee camps or in groups which were being looked after by people who had organized these children's transports, and I understand who still correspond or even meet each other nowadays. I was only attached to it, and I wasn't a part of it in that sense. It was a convenient way of leaving the country legitimately, quickly, and as soon as we arrived in England, I saw no more of them. I was met by a kind lady from the Society of Friends who made it their business to look after me and sent me to an agricultural training camp in Wallingford, run by the Christian Service Union, Wallingford, Berkshire. It's across the river. Wallingford is really Oxfordshire, but this is on the Cromarsh side. And it was called the Wallingford Farm Training Colony, run by the Christian Service Union, at which I was placed under the auspices of a Society of Friends, and where efforts were made to train me to be a market gardener, which regrettably met with minimal success because I never have had green fingers.
How in general did British people welcome you or otherwise receive you in Britain in 39?
With enormous sympathy and warmth. It was a rather strange experience in a way, having jumped into the dark with both feet, completely into the unknown, to be welcomed with such sympathy and understanding, and to be accepted as a person in one's own right. I was, of course, very thin-skinned, probably by nature anyway, but under the circumstances, feeling a stranger in an environment in which you were a refugee and felt that you ought to give thanks for every breath of free air which you drew, and apologize for the space you took up. And that can generate a peculiar emotional and psychological reaction, almost of resentment, that one feels one has to be grateful for being allowed to be there. It makes one very thin-skinned indeed, and it can make one quite, I won't say truculent, but certainly react in quite a sharp manner if somebody might, for argument, say, do they have trams in your country? First reaction would be, it's not my country. And you try to dissociate yourself. And it took time to realize that all this was a perfectly friendly curiosity on the part of people who were perfectly prepared to allow people to be themselves, and that in this country one was allowed to be different, that it was free in that sense. It was quite a lesson to learn, coming from a society which was rather oppressive and in which conformity was mandatory, to be in a place where one was perfectly at liberty to be different, and no one would think the worse of you. That was lesson number one. And the natural respect, which I do think is rather particularly British, for the right of other people to have a different opinion from oneself and not think the worse of it for it, that was another lesson which it was quite difficult to swallow.
Did you come across any anti-German feeling amongst ordinary British people?
I can't honestly recall any that would have been in the least personal. Certainly there was anti-German, anti-Nazi feeling, but it wasn't a sort of hate or hostility. The contrast in general attitude and tolerance was very marked.
This market garden training that you had at Wallingford, you mentioned the Christian Service Union. What exactly was that?
I'm afraid I don't know too much about it. They ran this Wallingford Farm Training Colony which had several houses on the public school model, I suppose, and inmates, the inhabitants, tended to be boys from perhaps deprived backgrounds, perhaps homeless or without family, found wandering in Liverpool docks or something like that. Boys whom it might be difficult to place or to bring up in other careers or career structure. Perhaps some who might have been to Borstal or weren't quite ripe for Borstal yet. It was rather a mix. Oddly enough, I didn't feel terribly strange in that environment because it didn't occur to me that it could have been otherwise. I accepted very much at the time what was happening and accepted it at face value and took it for what it was worth.
Did it seem to be a well-organized venture that they were running?
Yes, it was certainly reasonably sizable. I suppose they looked after 200 to 300 boys and also had another wing which was some way off for boys who were mentally retarded or ill, and did very good work indeed. A farm of about 1,000 acres on which the professional staff used the boys who were being trained as the labor in the course of their training to help carry the venture, but of course what with that and the teaching staff, the supervisory staff and so on, it couldn't possibly have paid for itself. It must have subsisted on the basis of the kind of legacies, donations, etc., which charitable venture of that sort attracts.
Had you spoken any English before you came?
School English, yes, but I did find it very a very laborious process to try and make myself understood, and more to try and understand other people. And I think this time, this period, 1939 to 40, when I was at that farm training colony, probably helped me no end by living among the average English boy. And there was one particular sort of point of no return beyond which you suddenly found that it came easy. I don't think it's merely what one speaks oneself, reads or tries to learn. It's what you hear all round you all day, which kind of soaks into your bones, and suddenly you find that it's become natural.
What happened once war broke out to you? Were you subject to the enemy aliens business?
Well, I think that these regulations were rather erratic. Certainly, I was registered as an enemy alien. I believe I had to report to the police and carry an identity card. On the other hand, there were changes at the Wallingford Farm Training Colony as a result, and people got called up and so on. There was a shortage of staff. I was by then 18 years old, and I became one of the brothers, as the staff were called, helping to look after the boys in the colony. And that in itself, again, was quite an instructive period. I can't really recall exactly how long it lasted, because presently also a boys' refugee camp was established for people like myself, and since I was already familiar with the place, I was sent by an organization at Woburn House in Bloomsbury to two of the refugee camps where there were young people, one of them being at Richborough, and I quite forget where the other one was, in order, as it were, to recruit volunteers to go to that place. and publicize it if you wish. Talking to the boys who it was intended to send to this particular camp for agricultural training, and preparing them to make them want to go, in other words. I don't think I succeeded very well, because there were lots of voluble protests. They were sent all the same, and a refugee camp was established, in which I became head boy at first, but then after disagreements ceased to be, and somebody else who was more worthy of it became head boy. And we built an annex to this foreign training colony ourselves out of prefabricated wooden huts which were supplied.
Did you say this was at Richborough?
No, this was now at Wallingford again. The idea was to establish an agricultural training wing for refugee boys to add to the British boys for whom the colony was originally run. And it turned out to work quite well. And while these German or Austrian townies who protested at being taken to an agricultural camp buckled to, and we built our huts, and they were allocated to their various training courses. The time soon came when you couldn't get them to keep quiet after lights out, because they kept talking about their cows and their calves, and they took to it quite well.
So there was no question of interning you as an enemy alien?
I don't honestly know why not, because some young people were interned. Whether it was considered that we were in a situation where we could be reasonably looked after anyway, supervised anyway, I don't know, or whether it was simply the rather erratic working of these acts and arrangements and the tribunals that administered them, I honestly can't say, and I don't recall whether any of our lot were interned, but it was by then the end of 1940. I went to Oxford to try and enlist. I signed up and asked what unit. I said Pioneer Corps, and when the recruiting sergeant was a bit taken aback, I explained that I was an alien, and so I was accepted for the AMPC, the Auxiliary Military Pioneer Corps, as it was then called, which had aliens companies, and whose training depot was at Ilfracombe. I accepted the King's Shilling, and about Christmas time, I received my call-up papers telling me to report at Ilfracombe, where I arrived in the last days of December 1940, which pleased me enormously, because I've always been able to claim that I joined up in 1940 and not 41.
How did you find it in the Pioneer Corps?
Difficult to summarize. Obviously, as a young chap, I was quite excited about joining the army under the circumstances of that war. After brief initial training at Ilfracombe, I was sent to the 87th Company Pioneer Corps, who were at the time in South London, billeted in partly bombed property bordering on Blackheath, and departing every morning to various parts, usually in the Woolwich Plumstead area, to help in clearing bomb damage. It was a very interesting time. It was during the height of the Blitz, and apart from getting to know the rather mixed crowd of which this company consisted, of mostly German Jewish refugees, one also got to know the citizens of Southeast London quite well, because we mixed with them, and they tend to have a sort of parent feeling towards us, and brought us cups of tea, invited us home for tea, and indeed invited me to spend my first leave with them. That was Dave King and his wife, a builder in Plumstead. And that was a remarkable period and a real eye-opener. The Blitz was in full swing. I stayed with these good people, and most nights were spent in the shelters, and everybody had some kind of a job as a warden or rescue or fire watcher or whatever. And I went along with that, and we had a few heavy-ish raids during that time, and, well, at the least, a lot of shrapnel, at the worst, the odd landmine, which would make a whole row of houses keel over. And it was a very intimate way of getting to know these people very quickly, under the circumstances where we sort of lived in the warden's posts and shelters together, helped to pull injured people from rubble and that kind of thing. And there again, I conceived an enormous respect for these people who didn't give themselves any airs and didn't think that they were at all special, but kept up a sort of a cheerful courage and without any great hatred against the Germans, I might add. Again, it was... one heard remarks like, well, those poor buggers are doing their job, I suppose. They don't much want to do that either. Nobody seemed to like Hitler very much, which I could very well understand. But on the whole, I learned to respect the wisdom informing so many of them in a sort of deep, kindly, well-balanced attitude, and you learn to respect people who might be very simple, who might be quite uneducated, but who had a great deal of wisdom and a personality one could respect.
So you don't think they were trimming their opinions about the German air crew because you had come from Germany yourself?
I don't really think so, no. No. Again, I mean, at that time it was known, we had no reason to hide the fact that we were Germans, but it was regarded as a point of interest, but it didn't, so far as I could judge, influence their general view of the world and of other peoples and of the war.
So you didn't find people demoralized by the bombing?
Well, certainly not at that time, and certainly not in that area.
Do you remember any specific parts of southeast London where bombs fell? Any particular bombs that caused special damage?
Well, only rarely Plumstead and Woolwich, and one particular landmine which did a great deal of damage. And of course it was our job there to help clear up the bomb damage, and it gave you a clear view of the English building methods during the ribbon developments of the 30s, which was quite an eye-opener, because in many of these houses the chimney was the only thing that was really a solid thing. The whole house seemed to hang from it. Any other wall, after the shock of the detonation had loosened the mortar, you could just walk along with a sledgehammer, rhythmically swinging it and knocking out every other brick at the base, and then putting your shoulder against the wall and putting it over. And that was the demolition. No, I'm afraid I can't really, apart from the name I happen to remember of Dave King, the builder, I can't really remember anything else very much. In the evenings we used to pile into our lorries and go back to Vanbrugh Park, Blackheath, where we were quartered. And there were various dances and other means of meeting the opposite sex, which also helped us to feel at home at the time we were. It was a time I wouldn't want to forget.
So that was your job, to knock things down, to make things safe?
That's right, yes. And generally to clear bomb damage, which was carted away. I think much of it did eventually find its way to Blackheath, where there were large infills from bomb damage, from rubble.
How did your work in the Pioneer Corps progress from that?
We tended to be sent here and there where something particularly wanted doing, and I believe the next place we were supposed to be sent to was South Wales, where to help with mine laying and wire obstacles along the coast and that sort of thing. But apparently, just after we got there, there was some difficulty with fire watching. Some conscientious objectors had gone on strike or something. They didn't have enough fire watchers, and we were suddenly sent to Liverpool, and there quartered in some bomb-damaged property. We tended to be taken out to Bootle and do our stint of fire watching during the nighttime hours on top of those rather old-fashioned, very narrow, very tall warehouses. And then in the mornings go back to the Sefton Park area where we were quartered, which lasted, well, for a few weeks certainly. And I made a lasting friendship at that time because one of my colleagues in our company was a Latvian called Raiman Zhenya, which is the Russian endearment for Eugene. Raiman was a tall, very forceful chap, full of vitality, and who had been stationed in Liverpool as a censor, a postal censor, before he too joined the Aliens Pioneer Corps, and billeted on a family to whom he introduced me. The Cleelands came from Northern Ireland originally, I think, and had one daughter, and they became my family. They were extremely friendly people who invited me to spend leaves there, and Liverpool became became my alternative home, really, and Mother Cleland became my substitute mother in a way. I became very fond of her. Zhenya used to write to them regularly, and they were very fond of him too. Well, after our stint,
was this after the Blitz had finished in Liverpool?
No, that was fortunately for us just before. That was fortunate enough just before, otherwise I think we would have suffered quite a lot of casualties.
So
as it was, it wasn't, no, it was a quiet time.